The Truth About College Admission podcast, as well as our book and workbook, are brought to you by Johns Hopkins Press. Visit press.jhu.edu to learn more about their wide selection of books and journals from the world's most trusted authors, experts, and sources. I am one of your hosts, Brennan Barnard. I'm the Director of College Counseling and External Affairs at Khan Schools Network and the College Admission Program Advisor for the Making Caring Common Project.
And I am Rick Clark. I'm the Executive Director for Strategic Student Access and Enrollment Management at Georgia Tech.
And for this episode, we were joined by Tony Altimore, who is a strategy consultant, formerly with Deloitte and Credit Suisse and TIA, with the Central Intelligence Agency. He's really done a little bit of everything and kind of prolific in the world of college athletics and, you know, huge presence on Twitter. And so it was a great conversation. And Rick, you know, I mean, the conversation was kind of, it spanned every aspect of it. And, you know, we could have gone full on any one of those issues. And I just really like how we kept on coming back to this idea of belonging, right? And yes, athletics and finding a good fit for you there, but also just finding a place that no matter what, you feel like there's a good energy and you belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. He hit on that a couple of times. I mean, his big thing, you know, in his consulting work with athletic departments around the country and the analysis that he does there is it's really about the business of sports. And in a lot of ways, people don't like to talk about college that way as a business. And they sometimes really don't want to talk about college athletics as a business, especially when it's their own kid thinking about going to college. But when they do think about the economics, what I think most people, I can say for myself, thinking about and ultimately going to play Division I soccer, you know, my freshman year in the Patriot League, thinking about many of my friends here in my neighborhood, kids that I've coached that are now, you know, in high school, they're usually thinking college, whatever, baseball, soccer, you know, even football, basketball is going to mean a scholarship. And, you know, he talks in there, he specifically is talking about Division III football, but that could be expounded out to lots of different things. The truth is that the majority of kids who go to play college sports are not getting scholarships at all. And if they are partial scholarships. And I think that, you know, while your student might be amazing and super talented and be getting some attention from colleges, and now more than ever, there's clinics and there's showcases and there's all these things out there, right, to sort of lure you a little bit more and more down that road. I think most people should go in kind of the way when Lisa D'Amore was on and she was talking about, like, even admittance to some of these highly selected schools is sort of like a lottery where you're like, I'm shocked that I actually got in. I think it should be more like, instead of the expectation that my kid, who really is very talented in sports, is going to get a scholarship, it should be like, oh my gosh, amazing. Surprisingly, they actually did get some money, probably not a full scholarship, to go play their sport in college somewhere.
Well, and the NCAA has some great statistics and graphics on their website about kind of the percent of high school athletes that go on to play in college, and then the percent of college athletes that go on to play professionally. Mm-hmm. And right, it is a shrinking percentage.
Well, and we can put that in the show notes. The other thing I just wanted to quickly talk about that he sped through a little bit when we were talking about the transfer portal is this. He said early on in that conversation, I think it's a good thing because it gives kids options and no penalty. And I can actually think of a student I know right now who went to play soccer in college. He's a freshman currently, and there was a coaching change. And that new coaching regime coming in is saying, if you're not playing this style, you're really no longer going to really be getting playing time or welcome here. Now, in the past, that was a nightmare, right, to have that happen. But now, through the transfer portal, that student is going to probably have some other options. So, you know, you and I always, whether it be in our presentations at schools and in communities or in the book or in the, you know, you're writing for Forbes and mine in the blog, at the end of the day, what we want as parents for our kids is choices and options. And in some ways, the portal, while not perfect and still evolving, mm-hmm. does actually that mobility, and it opens up more options and choices. That is a good thing.
Yep, absolutely. Well, enjoy this episode with Tony Altimore. Today we are pleased to welcome Tony Altimore, and it is great to have you here. Thanks, Tony.
Glad to be here.
So we start every episode with the same question for our guests, and that is kind of, can you tell us about your personal admission journey? Where did you decide to go and why? Any, kind of broad takeaways or tips you'd offer to families?
Sure. So actually, grew up as actually I have two admissions journeys from undergrad and grad school. They're both very different. But when I was an undergrad, I grew up in Michigan, in the 90s. My parents both went to Michigan State. Most of my friends went to Michigan. I actually grew up as a big Notre Dame fan. And then I during high school, I actually started to be recruited by the admissions team at USC. That was when Duncan Murdoch was running their admissions department. And just, kind of like started to be enchanted with USC. And they did a really interesting thing. This was so smart. I don't know if they still do it, but if they wanted you to interview for one of their big scholarships, they would fly you and a parent out there in February to do it for their whole sell weekend. I mean, they march in the band and the song girls, the whole do it all up for USC, and just absolutely fell in love with the school. There's an energy and a spirit there that is really, really unique. And folks who haven't been to the campus, you should go. Like, it's a really magical place. And so I really fell in love with that. And then when I was looking at business school years later, after working for a while, I had debated between, the benefits, like, should I do a part-time MBA program or a full-time program? And really fell in love with the folks at the Wharton School. So, fight on Trojans and fight on Penn.
And go fight on Quakers, as ironic as that might be.
Exactly.
You really just wanted to throw toast on the field.
I know. It's I'll tell you, it was kind of funny for me. Again, coming from this USC mindset, the day that I was able to get like parallel parking on the street during the Harvard Penn football game, not realizing it was going on. You can't do that at the USC campus on the day of the USC Stanford game.
And to clarify for folks, USC being University of Southern California, and since we're going to be talking about sports today,
As we say, there's only one.
well, I'm reminded of Dabo Swinney at Clemson saying, USC is in Los Angeles, Carolina is in Chapel Hill, and the University of South Carolina is Clemson. So that was always a great quote from him.
I always like to tease my South Carolina friends. They're, of course, also a great school, lots of great people.
No question, no question. Well, listen, we want to hear a little bit. I know you've bounced around a good bit, done some really interesting consulting work at a variety of organizations, including the CIA. Can you tell us, a little bit about what you're doing these days? I mean, I know you primarily from some of the work you've done on Twitter, really interesting visualizations
Oh,
about
thank
what's
you.
happening in sports. Yeah, absolutely have enjoyed following that, and we're going to get into that a bit. But tell us a little bit about, kind of what you're doing day to day, some of the folks that you're working with, both in the higher education world and outside of it.
Sure. So I work mostly with big companies. I have a big client right now in Montreal on corporate strategy work. But you also come from a background. One of the things that you don't usually see is I've actually spent 20 years doing nonprofit pro bono work in organizational development and leadership development for an undergrad fraternity, where I worked with kids from 250 different schools and administrators from those 200, not all of them, but many of those 250 different schools on their student organizations. Also, when I was at USC, I worked in the athletic department for 4 years, studied under the USC president, helped run a club sport team at Penn in grad school. And so when the whole Texas and Oklahoma thing happened, I was sort of stunned that a lot of the media people that I, loved and followed for their sports guru expertise didn't know anything about these institutions or the athletic departments or how they function as they really are institutions. And I use the analogy that, listening to sports reporters talk about what schools should do is like, listening to somebody say what Walmart should do based on the, flavor of pizza in the food court. Like, this is a big institution that makes decisions about on an institutional level. And so, started to try to put out some information to try to help people. And Folks really appreciated it, and I kind of love, we got like a fun online community, and I always love interacting with them.
Well, and can you just clarify for people when you say the Texas Oklahoma thing, just for people who aren't in the know?
Yeah, so the University of Texas and the University of Oklahoma in the summer of 2021 announced a monstrous change where they were going to move from the Big 12 conference to the SEC. And that set off a wave of moves. My beloved Trojans then followed suit and moved to the Big Ten, which, again, as a Michigan kid who, looked at Michigan and parents went to Michigan State, that was like, oh, all my worlds have come together in the Big Ten where I think they belong. But looking at the impact on the organizations was huge because there is such a key piece that the big brand sports play for a lot of those schools. And when the exodus of those big brands out of the SEC and the Pac-12 or the Big 12 and the Pac-12, it destroyed the Pac-12 because everybody else wanted to go too then, even though they didn't have to, by the way. And funny enough, for history students may not realize this, Pac-12 actually tells a fake history of itself. They actually already did that once in the 1950s. When they left the Pacific Coast Conference, created the Pac-12, and did the exact same thing as they just did with the Big Ten. So history repeats. And so that was a monstrous move because what it does then is it leaves people behind. And when you're left behind, from a higher ed standpoint, you're no longer in the cool kids club, and that becomes an issue. And there's a lot, this is an industry with a lot of Me Too and a lot of, I want to be in the cool kids club demand. And what you really saw was we've really gone very quickly from five more or less co-equal conferences to two way more than equal conferences.
Well, maybe we can kind of take the cool kids from the student perspective for a second and kind of go to the other end of things. Because, there's tons changing in the world of youth sports and, how that intersects with college athletics. My daughter is a high school senior and a recruited athlete and in D3. And, we talk to a lot of students with aspirations of playing college sports. Can you kind of give us a frame for how likely it is that students will continue their sport in college and some of the scale of that?
So, I mean, and you guys, there's a lot of like numbers and statistics we could look at, but let me sort of simplify it. And the answer is that that number is a lot less likely than you'd think. And also one of the things that really happens a lot at a lot of these, especially if the kids go to some of the big schools and the big athletic programs, and even on, the D3 level, is what happens is they get into something. And when you're at these bigger schools, it's a full-time job. If you're a swimmer, you have swim practice twice a day. And I mean, going back to we used to laugh, my fraternity had a ton of former USC swimmers because the USC swim team was coached by the Olympic swim coach. And there comes a point at which you're like, some of these kids say, wait, why am I doing this? First of all, I'm paying to be here. And because, there's not a lot of scholarships in the Olympic sports. And second, like, I'm not going to go to the Olympics. That guy's going to win an Olympic bronze in whatever, but I'm not going to go. I don't even go to our own meets. So why am I spending 6 hours a day doing this? And so they leave and they quit. And it's a very interesting transition that, a lot of folks sort of, they don't follow it through, even if they do start there. So, as folks think about looking at the college decision, I would say, to the extent that you love it and you want to be a part of it, do it. Take advantage of what you can. Use it to get in. Use it to enhance your admissions, attractiveness. But know that it may not be something you plan to follow through on, and know that there's a lot less scholarship money out there than I think a lot of youth sports parents think.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I think that one thing you said there and alluded to is so true. Like, if you go to a particular institution already committed to playing athletics, Make sure it's also a place that you, to the best of your ability, can separate in your mind to say, if this doesn't work out for one reason or another, be it injury, be it just disillusionment, burnout, whatever, then I'm still going to be good to stay here. Not that transferring is the end of the world. We're going to transition to talking about that in a second. But I mean, just I think a lot of students are like, I just want to play my sport in college, D1, D3, whatever it might be. And they're so focused on that that it's hard then to remove themselves and say, but if that isn't true sophomore, junior, senior year, or some point along the way, this is still a place I want to be, right?
Well, and I would also say one of the other big things that doesn't get talked about enough, and I actually played one of these sports in grad school, funny enough, because you could, but club sports don't get enough attention. Because for example, if you're a lacrosse player, right? Like there aren't a lot of schools with varsity lacrosse. There's a ton of schools. There's MCLA is this, phenomenal, just world-class club sports league of lacrosse. And we're just using them as an example. There's also, swimming, whatever. That they have great club sports, but you can play that sport and be a student and be free of all of the negatives that go with some of the varsity sport and get to play the sport you love, have a great experience. Some schools, I mean, NYU funds their club sports better than like some a lot of schools fund their varsity sports. I mean, we used to laugh. We'd be like, what are they doing at NYU? Like, it's awesome if you're an NYU club sport. The Ivy League schools do the same thing.
But there's
So,
that stigma, right? I mean, there's that stigma of I'm not a Division One, Division Two, whatever. I'm not a recruited athlete in the same way that the bragging rights, right?
at this, but at the same time, would you rather be playing club lacrosse at Georgia Tech or varsity lacrosse at Wagner?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah, and so there's a lot. There's really a lot of advantage, I think, for kids to really think about those club sports because they're fun. They give you all of the rewards. In fact, a lot of them are probably more like varsity sports were 30 years ago.
Brennan, I know you've done a good bit of work with counseling students online, particularly, some of the elite athlete stuff that you've done. What's your take there? I mean, on this idea of, students that are thinking about playing in college, like how much does that come into their thinking of it may not be for my entire time? And okay, but club is there if it doesn't work out on the varsity level, or I would be okay transferring. I mean, do you, how much is that sort of part of the equation? What do you think families need to know about that?
I mean, I've worked at a school, like you mentioned, a school for elite athletes, online school that, a lot of them were Olympic caliber athletes and things like that. And so for them, it really is their kind of main focus, right? But I think there are a lot of students who it is such a significant part of their identity that as long as they can get a quality education wherever they are, like that's the principal thing. And so it's really a matter of identifying kind of what your priorities are, where you can thrive both in and out of the sport and in and out of the classroom, right? It's all about, I mean, just like everything in admission, it's a real balancing act of kind of what your priorities are and kind of what your goals are.
And that's, I would say that's also the same for one thing to think about for, people listening. That can be also true of music and band and theater and a lot of these other things that, people forget can almost turn into jobs.
Yeah.
People think about like, oh, I love my theater in school and in high school or whatever. And then they get to, and like, they find like the theater kids want to work on Broadway. And that's what their goal is. And so, no matter what it is, I would say, the most important thing that I would say also is be where you want to be.
Yeah, be where
Like
you feel like
be
you'll
somewhere
belong,
that
right?
you feel that energy in the students and you love the people and, go to classes and that, because that's what you're going to be doing all day. And so I think that matters, that should matter more than, oh, they want to have me. I mean, one of the things, we laugh about lacrosse. South Carolina lacrosse is a club team that beats varsity teams. And so those kids who want to play that sport, that doesn't. We are, I mean, our club cycling team at Penn, we had the national champion. Over all those varsity, we were a club team and we had the full over the varsity team's national champion. So, it's all about being where you want to be.
Yeah, and the reality is, kids are choosing schools because of a certain major or things like that, and that often ends up not being the major they want to study. So, it's a matter of like how willing are you to shift, if that's not the way you want to go, and what are the opportunities for you at that school if you do need to shift. And I think, this is why, we write about this in our book and we talk a lot about it. It is that, you need to identify your why, right? Why are you going to college and why are you going to that school specifically?
Yeah, no question. I was presenting to a board last week of a school, and then got into a sort of side conversation later about the transfer portal. And I wanted to just ask a little bit about this. So on my side of things, working in enrollment at an institution, the transfer portal has radically changed our work, and it's changed our interaction greatly with the athletic association. We've always signed off on what are called NIL, the NIL, right, that a student, or sorry, the NLI that a student signs, National Letter of Intent, has to, prior to that, the admission office completes something called a pre-cert, which essentially says, all right, based on what we're seeing, the student is eligible, whether it be test scores, GPA, grades, they're on track for graduation, et cetera. So there's always been pressure to turn pre-certs around quickly for students to then be able to sign their National Letter of Intent. The portal has accelerated that on such a level that, for just speaking for Georgia Tech, and I would assume this is true at schools around the country. I mean, even over the winter break, you had people working literally on Christmas Day, in order to turn things around because the mobility of certain sports in that window of time was, competition, right, with other schools that might grab that student out of the portal and then edge you out on the field or on the court, in the next year. And yeah, I guess what I'm kind of wondering, and so in talking to this board and having this conversation at a high school last week, the idea was, how does this change for high school students, their potential to go right into certain, sports or certain schools, if those institutions are now taking the accomplished sophomore from a mid-major or a junior who, or gosh, at this point, thinking about my alma mater, Chapel Hill, pulling like Cormac Ryan, who had been at, Stanford and Notre Dame, and I thought that guy was already done. He's 25 years old, and they still pulled him into play, on this.
It also comes from a Goldman Sachs billionaire family.
Exactly.
There's that too.
There's that too. So I guess what I'm kind of wondering is, like, what do you think about this? What should students or families and others be thinking? What's your take in general on the transfer portal? How is it changing and shifting that pipeline out of high school? And what would you think people might be asking questions around or considering related to the transfer portal?
So I think it brings up a lot of different issues at different levels. It gets a lot of attention at the most elite level, right? Like Carolina basketball, Georgia Tech football, stuff like that. One of the things that I would say that it does in a really good way is it lets kids that are in a situation, who realize, oh, maybe this wasn't the best situation, get out of that situation without any penalty. But one of the other things that it is really doing, it's a huge negative for people, I think, is it's letting student athletes who want to have playing time make what I think is a suboptimal educational decision. And that could be, if you're at Georgia Tech and you're not playing and you say, oh, well, now I'm going to transfer to, I don't know, Georgia Southern. And oh, now I'm not playing there. Now I'm going to transfer to West Georgia, wherever. Like you're changing the actual school. And I mean, the question is like, is this going to get you to the NFL? And I would argue that, if you're having trouble getting playing time, you're probably not going to the NFL. And so, is this move actually a good idea? Because what happens is these guys go into the portal and they take a step down. And I think the real question needs to be like, are you really taking, is that step down smart? Now, there's other kids who are doing it awesomely, right? Like, you mentioned Cormac Ryan, like the Ivy League kids who then like transfer, they graduate from the Ivy League schools and transfer and USC and UCLA are just like fishing in that Ivy League pool right now to be like, oh, we'll take the best basketball players from Harvard and Penn as seniors and put them in our business school. Yes, please, whatever. And so, there are some kids who could really do need opportunities from that, especially, as graduate transfers that there are really great opportunities. But I think the bigger question for parents and for students is, are you making an irrational decision based on playing time? If it's all about playing time, go play on the club team. Because here's the thing is, if you're not playing, are you going to go and have success elsewhere? And I'll give you actually a great example. The old USC baseball coach is a friend of our family's and told it. And there's actually this kid's actually in a book, so his story is well known. But he had a kid who just couldn't hit Pac-10 pitching. USC baseball player couldn't hit Pac-10 pitching, and so he had a very frank conversation with the family and said, "I'm sorry, can't hit him," and helped, made some phone calls and helped, and the kid transferred to Penn. And graduated from Penn, but in those 3 years, got a lot better and was doing great. And then later, as a senior, came back to the USC baseball team as an MBA student. It was so okay. So the kid ended up, with a bachelor's from Penn and an MBA, I think, from USC. So I mean, I think it was an MBA. Somebody in the comments will be mad. But I mean, it's a just so there are great opportunities. That you can do that, and especially for kids maybe that have an opportunity to maybe get to a better school. If you can use that to get to a better school, then I think it's a great opportunity. I just worry I see too many people, I think, making the opposite choice.
So let's kind of turn to the impact on schools, on colleges and universities, because on Twitter you discussed the demographic cliff that's, this likely drop in enrollment and that's coming to colleges nationally. Even with well-branded schools and with kind of a national reach, what do you think the impact is going to be on their sports programs, and what's that mean to families? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think you're going to see a couple different impacts in a couple different ways. The first one is the sustainability of some of the athletic department subsidies. I don't think are real. Coastal Carolina, every kid at Coastal Carolina, every student is contributing $3,400 a year towards subsidizing the athletic department. It's a school with 25% or something first generation students. That's too much. That's a lot of money. And I, you know, as the, if they feel a tightening of their, student body, that's not sustainable. So I think these schools that have huge subsidies that also rely on tuition. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you another example. UAB, massive medical enterprise. It's the Med School of Alabama. It's a huge school. I don't know, something silly like 5% of their or 10% of their budget comes from tuition. The University of California, Berkeley. Yeah, they have a huge athletic subsidy. They can afford it. But these schools that can't afford their athletic subsidies, we see this a lot. I love what's happening in the Sun Belt. I love the MAC. I grew up in the MAC world. Those subsidies are going to be threatened by reduced enrollment. So from an athletic department standpoint, be prepared for the squeeze. The budget squeeze is going to be very real. At the same time, a lot of schools, and some people don't realize this, a lot of schools are also using specific sports, particularly for enrollment drivers, right? Like D3 football is a huge financial gain to all those. Every D3 school is making a fortune off football because those athletes are paying to be there. And so you're winning students over. So it can be a great way to win students. If you're a school, if you give a kid a slot on your baseball team, you can win a student that might have gone somewhere else. And so from a school standpoint, it can be a phenomenal way to really be a strong way for you to maintain enrollment. I mean, there are D3 schools where 50 and 60% of the student body are on a sport, right? Because that's how they're getting them there. And the fact that you got to have a track team to get the kids who want to run track is just a a cost of doing business. And so from, you know, for those schools, I think it's the athletic department is going to become even more important. But where I think you're really going to see a squeeze is the bottom end of the you know, mid-tier Division I schools. You know, again, I fear for the Sun Belt. I fear for the MAC, especially because I think they're going to feel the squeeze. Others, you know, UAB, Wyoming, you know, New Mexico, you know, these are big, big money state institutions. They got the money if they want it. But some of these other schools, I really worry. I mean, 14, and I'm not picking on Coastal because I love what's going on at Coastal. But 14, I think it's something like 14% of their budget, the entire school budget, goes to subsidizing athletics. And that's, is yeah. that sustainable if your enrollment shrinks?
Right.
You know, what's interesting is everybody's been looking out at the demographic cliff for the last, you know, 10, 12 years. All these demographers and others have been talking about it. You know, boards of trustees, deans of admission, presidents and their cabinets have been studying this and looking at what impact it might have. Of course, what we weren't planning on was the pandemic, right? And depending on how many, how you count, a lot of people would argue around 1 million students made different college choices as a result. The other thing that many people would never have predicted is what we're dealing with right now, and that is this whole FAFSA debacle, which absolutely is going to exacerbate loss of students. So really what you've got is, yeah, a still pending demographic cliff, but preceded by two pretty significant like erosions, if you will, that nobody really expected. I guess what I'm wondering in that is...
well, and actually, real quick, let's add another thing, which is the wonders that technology has brought that allows schools to also allow schools, particularly on the top, to increase their capacity with remote learning. Mm-hmm. I mean, USC is twice the size that it was when almost twice the size it was when I was there.
Yep.
And they're, you know, schools are able to magnify. Stephen Sample, the legendary president of USC, talked about it. He said, I'm less afraid of Stanford and Cal than I am of the University of Phoenix.
Sure.
Because he's like, Stanford and Cal can't change my business, but the University of Phoenix can. And so, you know, one of the things also for those schools on the top is that they can increase capacity with remote learning, and that just dries up the pool at the bottom.
Well, and I mean, a lot of these healthy state institutions, I will say, particularly in the South, have been under a lot of pressure from their legislators to grow, right? So Georgia Tech and UGA as examples, and we have 3,000 more undergrads than we did 5 years ago. That's almost 20% growth in a pretty short period of time. Going from when I got here, a class of 2,200 to this year, a class of close to 4,000, right? Over a 20.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty significant. Where, you know, higher ed is an ecosystem and there is a supply and demand, not only for institutions, but across the board. Who's getting hurt by that? In many ways, the rest of the system, as you mentioned earlier, you know, some of the schools around our state, publics, regional publics, et cetera. And then back to the sports piece, sometimes those are mid-major level, you know, schools where the healthy schools, University of Alabama's, University of South Carolina's, again, sticking to the South, have grown so much, they're not only pulling their own students, because those states are declining in population, they're pulling kids from New Jersey and Connecticut and other places. And that is also part of this, right? The rich are sort of getting richer, the well-branded are getting bigger, and that is having an impact. I guess what I'm wondering in all of this is, do you think, what does that then mean for some of these schools that, you know, are going to have to make some tough budgetary decisions? Are we looking at elimination of certain sports? You know, what do they do from a business standpoint to stay viable, but also deal with the reality of shrinking enrollment, less money, et cetera?
Well, I think the first thing is you got to trim the fat. Central, let's pick on UCF. They do not need to spend the money they're spending to put a lazy river through the football, like, facility. Like, you don't need waterfalls. You don't, I mean, that kind of stuff, trimming the fat is a big thing that I think is going to be an issue. There's a lot of spending. Why are some, and let's pick on lacrosse because I like lacrosse, but there's schools spending $4 million a year on lacrosse. Like, okay, you know what? Maybe that number needs to be two. And there's a
Right.
lot of, first of all, there's a lot of fat that can be trimmed. And I
Mm-hmm.
think that that's an issue. The massive losses that some of these athletic departments sustain, a lot of those schools is not going to be sustainable. It's going to be fine at UCF, right? Again, they have what 30, I don't know, 36% admissions, something like that. Okay, so in the worst they go to 40, they'll be fine. But some of these other places that are struggling to keep up financially, I think they're going to have cuts. As far as the whole broader ecosystem, we still don't know how the whole world of NIL and employee status and all that is going to
Right.
work with Title IX. So we may see some of those sports either, dramatically cut or cut to almost like club-like levels. And the one challenge that I give to people that they, some of them don't like to hear, but I think is really true, is what do you really lose? What is the difference between a hypothetical South Carolina lacrosse team and varsity and their actual number one in the country club team? As far as a student athlete experience, I mean, you don't lose that much. And so could you have some of these sports ratcheted down to more club-like levels? Is there money to be saved there?
Right.
And also one of the things that I think is a big issue too is these athletic departments should not be raking into enormous facilities debt that they don't need.
Right.
And I will say, because of course schools can borrow money cheap, right? Because they're huge institutions. So there's a lot of advantages to using, debt financing. Florida State's doing a huge thing right now, but some of these schools have put themselves in the hock. And they just don't bring in the revenue that's going to offset that,
Well,
and it's they're going to get the pinch.
maybe we need to be looking at a system more like the UK system, right? Where it's mostly club, right? I mean,
Well, for a lot of these folks, there is a probably more cost-effective model. I mean, of course, USC money isn't really an issue there, but we're spending 30, my beloved Trojans are spending $30 million on a spectacular new soccer and lacrosse stadium.
right.
Do we need
Your alumni dollars at work.
it?
Well, Tony, this has been great. I mean, there's so many lanes we could go down here. And we really appreciate you being here with us. And we typically close by kind of asking our guests to share a final tip. And you're a strategist. What are your thoughts for students about their college admission journey?
I guess my main thought would be, find somewhere that you love the energy of, and go there and really, look for that sometimes over the brand. That I think that is something that can really matter. The other thing I would say to folks is, really think about, does distance matter or not? I remember when I was in high school, my mom had what she called the Purdue rule, which she said if it was further than Purdue, it didn't matter because you'd be on a plane. So it didn't matter if it was USC or Georgia Tech or NYU or wherever. Like once you got past a certain point, it was a plane. So, keep that in mind and find somewhere you love, and good luck to everybody.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much, Tony. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed that conversation today with Tony Altimore about just college athletics in general, what that might mean for you if you are aspiring to play, if you have a son or daughter who's aspiring to play. And again, in our show notes, we're going to include a couple helpful links to give a little bit more information around what that looks like from a macro standpoint. We hope you'll check that out. I also wanted to particularly thank our season two sponsor, Grown and Flown. I've worked with them for a number of years. They are a phenomenal resource for parents of high school students. Have a website that's full of expert content on college admission and really all aspects of raising teens. They have an affordable monthly membership called College Admission, Grown and Flown for Families. Who have questions about admission and how to pay for college, which, again, in the episode today, just increasingly part of the equation and starting and understanding what that's really going to look like. We've put a link in there that's free for 3-week trial. You'll be able to check that out, find a number of different current, reliable advice from admission experts on weekly live sessions, and then actually archive hundreds of videos that they have from past sessions as well at no additional charge. So we hope you'll check that out. We really appreciate you listening, and we will be back soon with another episode.